is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington, and here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Naspa Manyao, a disability activist with an organization called Impairments International Trust, says people living with disabilities are the most affected.
That's reporter Kutsai Zinawashi talking about new pandemic restrictions in Zimbabwe. Details coming up also. News reports indicate the Ethiopian army has killed 4 and arrested 9 senior members of the Tigray People's Liberation Front. And recently elected Central African Republic president has announced a curfew throughout the country. All these and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Malawi's government says it now will strictly ensure everyone is complying with COVID-19 preventative measures. Authorities say the aim is to curb surging cases of the coronavirus, now averaging more than 200 a day. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
Figures released by Malawi's Presidential Task Force on COVID-19 show the country confirmed 274 cases and 4 deaths Thursday, the highest figures in a single day since April, when the country recorded its first 3 cases of the virus. At a televised press conference Thursday, government authorities attributed the spike to an influx of returnees from South Africa and also a laxity in observing preventive measures imposed in May during the first wave of the coronavirus cases. Charles Kalemba is the principal secretary in the Ministry of Local Government. He says starting now, the government will make sure everyone is adhering to the measures that include mandatory wearing of face coverings in public places.
Meaning people will be returned from entering offices or shops or restaurants or any public place if they are not wearing a mask. Water and sanitation buckets should be put in at visible places at all times in these public places. Strict enforcement of hand washing and usage of hand sanitizers in markets, offices, business premises, and other public facilities.
Kalemba says drinking establishments are only allowed to open from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. and drinking beer at the pubs is banned. Public gatherings have been restricted to 100 people, and preparing and taking food to funerals is prohibited.
Dead bodies shall be laid to rest within 24 hours. This was promulgated that time, but I think it was relaxed. So this time around, those managing funeral places must make sure that we do not keep people in one place for a long time. The reason here is that the more you keep people together, the more the spread of the disease will be encouraged.
Secretary for Minister of Homeland Security, Kennedy Nkoma, says government will deploy police officers in public places to apprehend those who fail to comply with the measures.
We are ready to implement all the measures which have been put in place and enforce them as it is. We have the police service, which will be tasked to do the job on behalf of the ministry.
Kumbize Kandodo Chiponda is the Malawi's Minister of Health and also the co-chairperson of the Presidential Task Force on COVID-19. She says the worry is that more than 60% of the infections are through local transmission. This, she says, is likely to put a strain on health workers and on the capacity of public hospitals.
In terms of capacity, we have reached 50% of our capacity in all our hospitals, meaning the space which we have reserved for COVID-19 patients. We have to keep in mind that we still have other conditions as well, which also needs our health workers to take care of. It is a worry to us as a committee, and indeed it as a Minister of Health.
Kandodo Chiponda says government will start recruiting more health workers to spread the workload in various healthcare centers as the number of COVID-19 patients keeps rising. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre.
The French news agency AFP reports the Ethiopian army has killed 4 and arrested 9 senior members of the Tigray People's Liberation Front. The news comes 2 months after Ethiopian Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed opened a military campaign in the north of the country against the TPLF leadership, saying the group orchestrated an attack on federal army camps. The TPLF says the offensive is a war on Tigray. Those killed include a TPLF spokesperson, a former head of the Tigray Finance Bureau, a former director of the Ethiopian Broadcasting Authority, and a journalist close to the TPLF. The top leaders of the TPLF have been on the run since the capital of the Tigray region, Mekelle, fell in late November. The TPLF dominated Ethiopian politics for 3 decades until the arrival of Abiy, who was appointed in 2018 and progressively sidelined them. The fighting in Tigray has left thousands dead, according to the International Crisis Group, and sent thousands of refugees across the border into Sudan. The military court in Algeria acquitted the younger brother of deposed President Bouteflika and 2 former intelligence chiefs who were sentenced to 15 years in prison for plotting against the state and undermining the army. Algerian protesters doubt Algerian president's ability or intention to bring about real political change and construed the return of former defense minister Khalid Nazar from his self-exile in Spain as a plan for the military's old guard to take power in Algeria. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed 3 developments with William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington.
This case had been in appeal for quite some time. Another party leader, Louisa Hanoun, had already been acquitted on the same charges previously. I think this has more to do with letting off Bouteflika's brother Saeed and the 2 senior intelligence officials for a crime they really didn't commit, which was that they were accused of plotting against the state and of maligning the military, when in fact they were simply discussing who the next leader of Algeria should be, which is exactly the way the Algerian power establishment determines the next leader. So exactly as they're discussing right now in terms of who will succeed Tebboune if he doesn't recover fully from COVID-19, these officials were discussing that very scenario. Now, the nature of the pouvoir in Algeria is a big consensus of the power elites of the military, intelligence, and business establishment, and much of it is corrupt. These officials should probably be in jail for corruption, but not for this charge. And I think, or at least one of them still has pending corruption charges. But what this is really about is when Tebboune got sick, the president, and had a 10-week COVID-19 illness, including, I believe, 8 weeks in Germany convalescing and getting advanced treatments. Algeria panicked about another succession struggle like they had with picking the successor to President Bouteflika, which led to the Hirak movement and the crisis of 2019. And they're still in that scenario. They want to have all of the members of the pouvoir back out of jail, talking to each other and deciding on the next leader.
The court ruling triggered widespread criticism among supporters of Algerian Hirak movement, depicting it as another example of continued military influence on Algerian politics. Could that relaunch the street protests that were curtailed by the pandemic?
No. The street protests were curtailed by the pandemic, as you say, and went virtual, and they're not going to go out in the street anytime soon, unless we see a more typical triggering event for street protests, such as the killing of dissidents or the mass jailing of dissidents, something like this, but not simply the release of former regime officials who are unpopular. Now, the military influence as part of the system is just a feature of Algerian politics, not a particular narrow concern of the Hirak movement. What they're against is the entire system, the sclerotic, unjust system that's been in place since independence in 1962. So there will be social and political explosions going forward in Algeria, but with a different kind of trigger.
Algerian protesters doubt Algerian president's ability or intention to bring about real political change in the country. Is that a legitimate concern?
Yes. Even though he called the Hirak's objectives blessed, Tebboune has limited ability and limited intentions to make these reforms because it's not his job. His job is to protect the system and to manage limited change, so limited and so incremental that it's only meaningless. In fact, with the new constitution, some things got worse, such as the increased military and presidential power. General Nizar, of the fame from the 1990s civil war in Algeria, who was in exile, came back as part of the same process I was discussing earlier of bringing back all of the old guard of the Algerian pouvoir, the power establishment, to deal with the succession crisis and to choose who the new leadership in Algeria will be as several of these leaders age out or need to figure out their successors for other reasons. And what they believe is that if everybody's back from abroad and out of jail, there'll be less defections and less dissent among the elites for policy changes, new personnel, and most importantly, who's going to rule Algeria after Tebboune steps down.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at the American University in Washington. He was speaking with my colleague, Mohamed El-Shenawi. Zimbabwe is a few days into yet another lockdown amid spiking cases of COVID-19. Zimbabweans have generally welcomed the lockdown, but the restrictions that comes with it have been met with mixed feelings. Reporter Kudzai Nwashi has more from Harare.
Under the new lockdown, the manufacturing, mining, agriculture and tourism industries remain open along with the health services. However, most Zimbabweans make their living in the informal economy, such as street vending, and that is severely restricted now. Political analyst Rashid Mukundu says the restrictions fall short of fighting the pandemic.
The lockdown is not well thought out and is a half measure. As fighting the pandemic is not a question of simply restricting the movement of people, but ensuring that the same people have access to food, have access to sources of income, and that their livelihoods are protected.
Naspa Manyal, a disability activist with an organization called Impairments International Trust, says people living with disabilities are the most affected.
COVID restrictions, lockdown for persons with disabilities, it's a double blow because most persons with disabilities depend on vending, and vending is the most affected area. Also, persons with disabilities are now dying of hunger because our jobs have been cut and we don't have anywhere where we can get assistance. Persons with disabilities depend on other people's help because we cannot maintain the social distancing which is being called for.
Michael Ndebele has several ventures in the informal sector. He says the lockdown is damaging to them.
We are worried that the closure of the informal sector will see more lives affected in terms of livelihood. Traditionally, January is a month where people have no money and they try to recover from the expenses that they would have incurred during the festive season. And our fears already are that already the government has not indicated any intention towards alleviating the lives of over 90% of the people who are in the informal sector. So definitely we are headed towards a rough patch.
Ndebele says that during the first lockdown, the government destroyed the vending sites for many people, saying they did not meet regulations. He fears the government may use this as another opportunity to demolish informal trading structures. Unlike the previous lockdowns, this time there is no talk of any social safety nets to help vulnerable groups. As all this unfolds, an association of informal traders have approached the courts regarding how the restrictions target them. The second wave of the virus is wreaking havoc in Zimbabwe and sending citizens in search for ventilators for themselves or their loved ones. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinavashe from Harare.
In a statement read on national radio late Thursday, the recently re-elected Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra announced a curfew throughout the country as rebels threatened to march into the capital. So far, loyalist forces, United Nations peacekeepers, and some reinforcements from Russia and Rwanda are pushing the rebels back from advancing towards Bangui. According to a statement by the peacekeeping force of the UN mission in the Central African Republic, the rebels have not progressed for 10 days, except for entering the mining town of Bangassou, 750 kilometers east of Bangui. The Central African Republic, plagued by civil war for 8 years, held its presidential and legislative elections on December 27th. President Touadéra won 5 more years in office. The political opposition insists that Touadéra's victory lacks legitimacy. They have demanded an election rerun. Ugandan presidential contender Robert Chagulani, known as Bobby Wine, is defending a move to fly his children to the United States ahead of the election, saying it's for safety reasons. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
Uganda outlets this week were awash with photos of Bobby Wine's children at Uganda's Entebbe International Airport as they prepared to leave the country. Wine, who is the leading challenger against President Yoweri Museveni in the January 14th election, says there have been a number of threats against his 4 young children. That includes unknown people trailing them from school ever since he declared his candidacy.
I had to change their schools, but they continued to follow them. I had confined the children at home for the longest time because I originally had information that they were targeting them. Recently, we had very credible information that they were intending to kidnap some of my children in order to coerce me into subjugation, to accept things that I didn't believe in, or to make me say things or make statements that I don't believe in.
He says the threats have intensified over the past 2 months of campaigning, leaving him with no option but to fly them to out of Uganda.
I was advised by various leaders and various elders to get my minor children out of the country for safety, following all these threats of kidnapping my children and harming them physically. I decided to agree with that advice and got the children out of danger.
Government spokesperson Ofwono Pondo has dismissed Wine's claims as old narratives that have previously been used by other opposition political leaders. He says the government and leadership has no track record of harming or killing politicians, their families, or opponents. However, Wine and several of his supporters have been arrested and beaten in the past few months. Several supporters have died in protests, and in 2018, he was severely beaten while in police custody. Wine says he and his wife have resolved to stay back and continue agitating for the peace and freedoms within the country. Wine and 10 other candidates are running against Museveni, who has been in office for more than 30 years. His critics and international rights organizations say Museveni's government has become increasingly repressive in the past several years, which the president denies. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
Also, on Friday, the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights said it was concerned about what it called the deteriorating human rights situation in Uganda. Spokesperson Ravina Shamdasani said that in the past few months, numerous rights violations have been reported, including efforts to suppress freedom of speech and the right to assemble peacefully. Shamdasani noted at least 54 people died during riots and protests against the arrest of Wine, including opposition candidate Patrick Obio Amuret. The commissioner's office called on the Ugandan government to protect the freedom of speech and peaceful assembly and ensure the election process is free and fair. Boeing will pay $2.5 billion to settle a criminal charge related to its troubled 737 MAX jetliner. The Justice Department announced the settlement yesterday, nearly 2 years after the second of two crashes, an Ethiopian Airlines flight to Nairobi that went down on March 10, 2019. The first crash was a 737 MAX Lion Air flight in Indonesia, which went down into the Java Sea in October 29, 2018. In all, 346 people died in the two flights. Jackie Quinn with the Associated Press has more.
Boeing has reached a hefty settlement over a criminal charge that it defrauded safety regulators about the MAX jet. The Justice Department says Boeing has agreed to a $2.5 billion settlement that includes money for crash victims' families, airline customers, the airlines that bought the planes, and a fine. Two crashes, one in 2018, killed 346 people. After the planes were grounded in 2019, Boeing redesigned an automated flight control system blamed in both crashes. And in November, federal authorities again allowed the MAX jets to fly. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres has appointed two diplomats to key positions for the African continent. He has named Volker Perth of Germany as his new special representative for Sudan and head of the United Nations Integrated Transition Assistant Mission in Sudan. The UN statement says Volker brings to this position over 25 years of experience in academia, research, international relations, and diplomacy, including with the United Nations, as well as deep expertise in conflict resolution and regional geopolitics. Guterres also appointed Abdoulaye Mardié of Senegal as special coordinator for development in the Sahel. Dié is a macroeconomist, development expert, and according to the UN statement, has a strong leadership experience in managing complex development portfolios over the last 45 years. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the